This is Farfetch Threads, our people podcast, where you can hear the real stories about life as a Farfetcher.
Hello and welcome to Farfetch Threads, our people podcast. I'm Daniel, I'm an engineer at Farfetch, and today I'll be talking with Juliana Vail, our Director of Creative Production, and Charlotte Cole, our Director of Content. The topic for the day is creative operations at Farfetch. So, Charlotte, how are you today?
I'm very well, thanks, Daniel. Very well. How are you?
Doing well as well. Thank you very much, Juliana.
I'm great. It's Friday. I'm ready for the weekend.
So let me start with a couple of questions more on a personal note. Juliana, what are your favorite fashion trends right now?
So my current, I don't know if it's a fashion trend or sort of fashion initiative at the moment, but what I really love is the current focus on inclusivity and diversity that's going on in fashion right now. And selfishly, for me, really, it's the sizing inclusivity aspect of things. And so I felt like for a long time, it was really difficult to shop luxury fashion. And I just love that more and more brands are embracing and opening up to a lot more diverse sizing options.
And what's currently on your Farfetch wishlist?
Good question. So I think one thing is that I can't wait to wear shoes again. I feel like I've been in slippers and sneakers for the last year. So what I'm actually loving are these J.W. Anderson chain mules. So they've got this big chunky chain on top. They're really fun. So
gorgeous.
So kind of taking like a basic but adding a little quirk to it. So hopefully have those not just in my wish list, but in my closet soon.
I feel the same about suspenders. Charlotte. How about you, Charlotte? What are your favorite fashion trends right now?
Sure. So I don't really follow trends as such, but I do like following new brands. I really love Farfetch for that in particular. So for me at the moment, Nodelato is a footwear brand from Italy, which is absolutely gorgeous. Encourage everyone to check them out. They're super adorable, almost like 90s Barbie shoes. They're gorgeous. And by far bags as well. A little bit of a Y2K moment.
And how does that actually translate into items in your Farfetch wish list?
Almost like for like. I've got pretty much the entire catalogue in there, plus pre-owned bags. I have had a couple Christian Dior saddlebags pre-owned in my wish list for a very long time, just kind of staring at them, hoping for a purchase one day.
Amazing. Thank you. So moving on, one thing I always find interesting about talking with fellow Farfetchers is that because Farfetch grew so fast in a short amount of time, people had the chance to play different roles in the organization. Could you, Charlotte, tell us a bit about your journey within Farfetch?
Sure thing. Well, I've definitely felt that growth because I've been at Farfetch almost 9 years now. Which has gone by in the blink of an eye, but I don't know what that says about my sanity for having managed to stay here for almost a decade. Just as you said, it's grown a lot, and I would say my role has as well. So I'm responsible for creative operations content, so copy, localization, and our e-commerce imagery. It's kind of a rough approximation of what I do. And even though I've always been within Creative Ops, it's felt like I've had a different job every year because of that growth. It's felt like as Farfetch has changed, I've had the freedom to change my job at the same pace.
Very interesting. Juliana, could you give us a bit an insight on what has been your journey as well?
Yeah. So, I mean, I haven't been at Farfetch nearly as long as Charlotte, but it also feels like it's been a decade of changes and evolution since I've been here. So I started in Farfetch about 5 years ago, overseeing the studios in LA and Hong Kong. And then my role evolved to oversee the creative operation services for our Farfetch platform clients. So providing content, data, imagery solutions for those clients that are on our platform. And now my role is even further evolving to oversee the innovation streams and some of the emerging technologies within the fashion and luxury space. So I think, same as Charlotte, it's been an incredibly exciting journey. And I think it's just been really amazing to work with just really exciting and inspiring people.
A lot to happen then.
Yeah, for sure. And in the future, which I know we'll talk about.
Of course. Now, Charlotte, you being at Farfetch the most time, can you explain what creative operations is at Farfetch, what it does, what's it for?
Sure, I will certainly do my darndest to explain what we do. So creative operations is, well, it's a lot of fun and it's a lot of work. As a department, we do straddle between the creative work and the operational side of the business. We do what it says on the tin. And industry-wide creative operation teams are responsible for taking a creative vision and finding a way to build out a plan, a strategy and execution at scale. For that creative vision. And specifically at Farfetch, what that means is for our product imagery, our product copy, production process as a whole, but also our site content across the site experience, all of that is based on the content that we produce. And our kind of USP, which I think Juliana will go into more detail about later, is really the scale. That's what separates us as a creative operations unit from other competitors. It's the fact that we create highly creative assets, imagery, video, 360, copy, localization into 15 other languages, and we do it at pretty mammoth scale.
So that's amazing.
In a nutshell.
So you've mentioned the volume. Juliana, is there any other differentiator that makes Farfetch unique in the market, or is just volume?
Yeah. Well, not just volume, but I think, interestingly, creative operations can mean a lot of different things to different companies out there in the space. So sometimes they are part of a marketing organization, but here at Farfetch, we're part of operations. And I think that really kind of reflects that scale that we operate at. So just for context, for those of you who don't know, so we have 9 offices globally, 4 production studios, so LA, Hong Kong, Portugal, and Brazil. Depending on the seasonality, we can have over 700 employees as part of our operation. And I think it's worth a reminder, we're creating content not just for the marketplace, Farfetch.com. We also produce for Browns Fashion and all of our other platform clients as well. So massive, massive operation. And I think then the second unique aspect is how we really approach that scale. So kind of break this into three parts. So first, we're highly data-driven in how we make our decisions and how we manage and monitor our performance of our operations and also kind of the content we produce as well. And then we're also really committed to the philosophy of continuous improvement. And this is very much a sort of people-driven process and oriented towards making small incremental improvements to our processes. And then finally, we're really obsessed with our customer experience and really obsessed with that final quality and the output of what we're creating within the department. So, I mean, I think, you know, we take a lot of the principles from large industrialized operations. So a lot of the principles from that, but we use them to apply it to a really high quality creative output. So whether that's the content, the photography, or any of the data that we're producing within the process.
That's a lot of nuts and bolts. So it's a complex machine. I wonder how has that coped with COVID? You know, we have all the kind of restrictions, people, so must have impacted the business in some way.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it was a very challenging year, I think, for everybody within the industry, everybody globally. I think first and foremost, as an operation, we were focused on taking care of our people and making sure that our people felt safe and secure in whatever working environment that they were in. So similar to many other operations, some people could do their roles from home, but I think the nature of studio operations is that you can't do that role from home. So what we did is put a lot of safety measures within our studios and the studios that were operating. And I think the other interesting thing was where we saw the global nature of our operation come into play as well. So I don't know, Charlotte and Daniel, if you remember, there was a video that came out from our team members in China and Hong Kong, and it was almost a like how to quarantine. And it came out just as we were entering into lockdown. And it really gave me a lot of solace to sort of see our global team members and how they responded to it. So And there was a lot of support that happened across all of the studios. So some of the product in the US was going to Hong Kong. We were really able to kind of dig in and support each other globally. And then one of the stories I want to highlight out of what, again, was a very challenging sort of circumstance was the team in LA. So in the US, there were a lot of studios when I talked to colleagues that had to either furlough or unfortunately let go of employees. But in our operation in LA, we were really committed to not letting that happen. And so what we did is, and I should say we, but the really fantastic management team in the US did, was redeploy the studio team to work and support other areas. So we had stylists working with the visual merchandising team. We had photographers assisting with customer research. We also had photographers getting Six Sigma yellow belts. And so with that, they were able to make really significant and material contributions to the business while still being able to work from home. I think it's just such a reflection of the adaptability and the flexibility of the team that they were able to do that. So, but I think with regards to COVID and the pandemic in general, I think every single global crops team member really gets credit for keeping the operation running. And it's such just a testament to our values and our culture that we were able to achieve so much, that we were able to keep things going amongst just what was a very difficult circumstance globally.
An amazing story. Now, looking at the other end, so in the end, we produce content, beautiful copy and beautiful imagery. Charlotte, can you give us a brief insight how the brand consumer strategy is developed and how does that then translates into actual copy and imagery?
Absolutely. Very happy to. So at Farfetch, there is a broad consolidated strategy when it comes to brand and customer. And if we look at the Farfetch marketplace as a first start, because of course, across the platform, we have different approaches for the content that we produce. If we look at the marketplace, we work very closely with the brand team because they are responsible for building that marketplace brand vision. So what our principles are, what our North Star is as a business. And then what we do is take that vision and we translate it into a way where we have a strategy for the content that we create for our imagery on our PDPs, our menswear shots, womenswear shots, our still life, the copy that we produce, whether it be product information or site copy, user experience copy. And we then look to quite literally translate that vision as well so that for different countries and for different communities, that brand actually resonates. Because we know very well now we're such a global business that our brand strategy is all-encompassing, but we need to make localized alterations to suit our customer in all corners of the planet. Now, with customer in particular, when we talk about the customer strategy, that goes in a slightly different direction. It's all based on that brand vision. Everything comes from that central point. But the customer vision is almost an extrapolation and evolution of that, where we begin to look beyond the brand and think, okay, what technical, inspirational, and empowering information can we put on the site in order to make people, make our customers have a very fluid experience on the site and make an informed purchase at the end of the day? How can we make sure that people find what they want and are able to get exactly what they want when they want it? And for that, we need to take on more of a testing model. So whether that be A-B testing, which is an approach where we have two different types of content and we expose it to different 50% of our customer base. And then we wait for the feedback to understand how is that affecting our engagement, our conversion, our returns? What does this tell us about the content that we're producing? What direction does that lead us in? We use this methodology a lot for size and fit and for product information. It's very telling. Our customers are if we just follow our customers' data and feedback, it will always tell us what we're doing right and what we're doing wrong. But then we take it a few steps further with the UX research team as well to look into the more qualitative side of customer feedback. So how we set up interviews with certain customers to get feedback on new features that we want to test, new content we want to produce, new styling and imagery that we want to build out. All of this comes in to build almost a tapestry of feedback and information to help us have what we call our customer strategy. So it's quite complex, has multiple points of feedback, but it's incredibly valuable. And it's really one of the central points of how we produce content at Farfetch.
Thank you for that enlightening summary. One thing I wonder is, not all content is the same. So I assume that you at some point say that's enough work for this content. And that leads us to one of the questions we need to answer when producing the content, which is, how does quality balances with the efficiency? Julian, I believe that must be one of the balances you have to manage in creative operations.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, anyone who's working within creative operations, any leader, any organization, is working with the same challenge. And I think it's just the nature of what we do is that knife's edge of quality and efficiency. You know, and to highlight this, so when I started in 2016, Wall Street Journal came in and interviewed us in the LA studio. And the subtitle of it, in the subtitle of the article, they called us the pit crew of fashion photography. And so I think that reflects very much the focus on efficiency. And while we are still a very efficient operation, we really have shifted, as Charlotte was saying, is using this test and learn approach and using data to really think about and invest in that customer experience. And we know that content drives behavior and that it really sort of informs their purchase journey. And so we've made a lot of really exciting progress since that time. And I know that one of the major projects that does this is the Gold Project, which, Charlotte, I know that your team has been working on over the last few years, actually years in the making. So I don't know if you want to share a little bit about what that journey looked like.
Absolutely. And it certainly does feel like a lifetime of work has gone into this in recent years. So the Gold Project was a great example of quality versus efficiency, or rather quality and efficiency, as Juliana highlighted. So this project was about the elevation of all of our product photography, in essence. So our styling, photography, post-editing for still life, men and women's model shot. And this should be a relatively simple premise for most creative businesses like ours, because we have incredible creative direction, art direction, and wonderful talent inside the production studios. But as we've touched on previously, we have a ridiculous amount of product to shoot. So if we're shooting about 4,000 plus items a day, that's 5 or 6 or 5 plus photos per item, it becomes a completely untenable scale very quickly. So how on earth can we kind of prove the value of this work that we're doing, this elevation of our styling and photography, whilst managing it at scale? So it was through that A/B testing, through getting qualitative feedback, through leaning on the subject matter expertise of our internal creatives as well, to get that kind of baseline. And then we've worked on how do we operationalize it? So really make sure that the guidelines, the training, the onboarding, the recruitment of certain team members across production has been absolutely critical. And it's also been taking advantage of working with different teams as well to get that information. So not just leaning on the teams that would be that would come to the forefront of our minds based in, say, London and Portugal, where our biggest offices are, but also making sure that LA, Hong Kong, Brazil, all of our other studios can be involved in this as well, so that it's genuinely scalable.
Now that you mentioned the team, Charlotte, that's the perfect segue for me to ask, what kind of team do we have in terms of diversity, geography, all kinds of attributes that we need to create this to fulfill this this mission?
Awesome. So this subject I can actually talk about forever. I love our team so very much. And I can openly say that the reason I've been here for 9 years is because of the people in our department, because of our team. We are very global and we are very diverse by nature. So we have, Juliana mentioned our 9 offices. So geographically, we're very diverse. But then within our teams, whether it comes down to ethnicity, gender, sexuality, ability, all of these things, we have enormous intersections across our teams who represent these different demographics, these different communities, and it is really what makes our teams so special. We're also humble enough, I think, and just realistic enough to know that we've got a hell of a long way to go with this as well. So we're by no means done with our efforts to really bring diversity to the forefront of not just what we produce, but who we are as a team. But this kind of comes part and parcel with the work that we do, because, you know, we've said before, we're creative operations. We are both creative and operational at the same time. So it means that we have stylists, photographers, photo editors, copywriters, translators, working side by side with process engineers, planning teams, our technical teams, logistics and production teams as well. And this naturally promotes a much stronger sense of community and diversity, because you do not have like-minded or identical people all working in the same department. It creates challenges sometimes to make sure everyone is moving and developing at the speed that they want to and that we want them to, and that the culture is something that that we have to foster and really champion ourselves as leaders. But it's just so vibrant and vivacious to work on this team. And it just feels like a very human team. And that's thoroughly something that's come from top down, from our collective line management into our teams. We are people first. And I think Farfetch has put its money where its mouth is in the past year of being people first too, and really looking after us. And that's something that we've just wanted to emulate.
Perfect. And I assume that with such a diverse team, we are well prepared to face the future. Juliana, can you give us a bit of what's in your mind that will happen in the future in this area?
Yeah. Okay. Look into my crystal, my creative ops crystal ball here. So I'd say it's such an incredibly exciting time to be working within creative operations and luxury fashion, and kind of the combination of the two. And I think we're seeing so many trends emerge right now that are going to absolutely change the nature of our shopping experiences in the future. So the topic of luxury new retail probably warrants its own entire podcast. But a lot of that is reflecting the transformation that's happening in terms of our sort of shopping experiences in general. So merging online and offline experience, the changing demographic and changing customer behaviors that we're seeing. And also a big focus on sustainability and social responsibility also within retail. So I'd like to highlight maybe a couple ways that this is changing and how we work within Creative Ops. So the first is really focusing on these digital shopping experiences. So we partner very closely with our innovation teams, our consumer product teams, our tech teams, to really explore how these experiences are going to look in the future. And so within Creative Ops, we're exploring the creation of 3D assets that really are fueling a lot of these virtual try-on and virtual world experiences. You can see those on the site now in a lot of our sneakers and watches in particular. But what this means for creative operations is that we have to create an entirely new production line and entirely new ways of working that didn't exist before. So we have to think about, what does that look like when we put that into the, you know, over 600,000 products that we create a year? So there's a really exciting challenge ahead to try to solve for that. But then on the other side, in terms of Charlotte and what her team does too, is thinking about, what are the expectations of the customer in this space? So it has to be, you know, a luxury experience. Primarily, so it can't feel like necessarily like the Sims world, or it can't feel cartoonish. It has to sort of natively fit in with the luxury experience. The next thing we're looking at is exploring machine learning and AI to kind of complement a lot of what we do within the operation. So we're seeing that in translations. We're seeing that in potentially getting measurements out of our clothing in a much more kind of diverse way. And so I think we'll be looking at that and exploring that a lot more in the future. And then the last thing I want to highlight is just that we're passionate as a department to ensure that our content is really reflecting our customers and the needs and wants of our customers. So that means maybe looking at being more inclusive and reflecting our customers in our model selections, ensuring that our sizing and our size scales are accurate. And then also highlighting the sustainable products that we have on our site as well. So it's such an interesting time to be working within luxury fashion. I think we're certainly at a crossroads, and we're going to be seeing some really interesting developments in the next, let's say, 3, 5, 10 years, or maybe even a year from now. I don't know.
So thank you for that sneak peek into 2025, let's say. I don't know. Perhaps now. It's time to thank Charlotte and Juliana for a great conversation on today's episode of Farfetch Threads. And thank you to everyone who has been listening. Stay tuned and see you next time.
Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you, Daniel.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Juliana. Bye.
Thanks for listening. Make sure you never miss an episode of Farfetch Threads by subscribing to our Spotify and Farfetch People YouTube channel. If you're ready to do what's never been done, visit farfetchcareers.com.